Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Hornsby.
And it's Sunday the 9th of October, and what a week it's been. Kwasi Kwarteng U-turns on plans to scrap the 45p tax rate to appease the nation. Well, most of them. What are your thoughts on that one, Kev?
Yeah, it was a bloody stupid move in the first place, to be honest. I mean, like, what a crazy situation. Oh, let's just give all the people who earn 150 grand or more a lot more money. Yeah, that's really going to work. No matter whether you talk about drip down or whatever, that is just bizarre. So I think I said to you, he needs to get rid of this. And obviously the U-turn, the Conservatives were turning on them, and they basically, they had to do it. I don't think they had any choice. Otherwise, it's not going to get passed in, through Parliament. So,
do you think they were right to not U-turn on the banker's bonus element of things?
Yeah, I actually think they are right, because I think we need a good, solid City of London, because it produces a lot of money. I mean, yes, there are excesses there, but I think that was actually not popular at all, but I think it was a good move. I think it was a good move because we need those flows of capital coming through the country. It's as simple as that. And with us deciding to leave Europe, then we needed to somehow be on the same level playing field as New York and as the Asian markets, which is what we are now. So, yeah, I personally, I think that isn't a bad idea, because it's still going to create a lot of tax revenue.
Yeah. And then we've obviously seen the cost of living crisis, and then obviously fixed rate mortgages. I think the cheapest now is over 6%. I mean, that's going to cause some pain, right?
Yeah, there's going to be some pain amongst people. Hopefully some people have tied themselves in for a period of time over the last year or two with very low interest rates. So maybe it's not going to be completely black and white. But yeah, if you're coming to the end of your mortgage term, then you're going to have a few problems, aren't you? If you're on variable rate, it's going up, but not as drastically as you're talking about there. I think, you know, the variable rate ones are still not anywhere near the 6%, I think. More like 4.5, I think. So, yeah, I mean, I'm in England now, and I've come, and even in the shops, they're advertising that there's going to be a cost of living crisis. I don't get it. I mean, what?
Let's all be depressed, and then we'll depress you more.
I don't get the mentality. It's like bizarre. It's almost like, let's control, you know, the UK, let's control. And this is what was happening during COVID as well, if you remember, Phil. Like, I remember speaking to you and you're like, oh, we can't do that. We can't blow our nose. We can't, you know, and this same type of thing. It's just like, let's control the people. Maybe that's a bit radical, but I think that's what it looks like.
Yeah. So the other one that happened overnight, which was a shocker, but it was obviously very good news, was Biden, Sleepy Joe, issued a federal pardon for simple possession of marijuana. So basically, he's pardoned all Americans who've been convicted at the national level of possessing small amounts of marijuana. What are your thoughts on that? It's quite a radical change, but obviously very welcomed.
Yeah, it's radical. It's a very minor change in terms of the number of people, I think. I think you're only talking about 6,500 people, because most of them being done at the state level. But he was also trying to say to governors, please pardon the ones at state level as well, which would be a big thing. But I think more importantly, what does that mean? What does it mean to cannabis? What does it mean to CBD, you know, in general? What is the general scenario, basically? Because, you know, the leader of the free world has just said, well, actually, it's not that big a deal if you take this stuff, and it can have some benefits as well. So do you know anybody who...
I mean, it'd be nice to get another opinion.
So we're joined today by Callum Summerton, CEO of Chill Brands, and Ed McDermott, CEO of Seed Innovations. Welcome, gentlemen.
Very good, thanks.
Good. So what are your thoughts on, I mean, how does it affect your businesses going forward? What do you think of the news from America?
There's a whole bunch of different things that I think about it. Let's recall back to pre-Biden and Harris administration, where part of their pitch, if you like, part of their manifesto was to not just state legalized, but federally legalized cannabis in the US. So they're some years late in this very big, important piece that they promised to do as part of their election campaign. And it is fantastic news that it is finally being properly addressed and that Biden himself is talking about it, because he's been very quiet on the matter for a very long time. And you've had a number of different senators, et cetera, kind of pushing the agenda. But ultimately, it's a very good thing for the industry right now. Is it going to change everything overnight? Are we going to suddenly see safe banking in the US, which is effectively allowing people to bank properly? Because right now, if you have a US business, you pay state taxes, but you can't bank with a proper bank, a New York licensed bank, for example, which of course means that US institutions can't invest in the space. Technically, we as UK citizens can't invest in the space because we've got this bizarre Proceeds of Crime Act here in the UK, which we all know is not fit for purpose. But you know, there's a whole bunch of different reasons why it's very difficult. They can't cross state lines with the product, so they have to have effectively a vertically integrated business in every different state. And then, of course, you know, federal legalization above all things is the sort of key that will sort out all of those other problems. Crucially, we're obviously sat here in Europe and we're dealing with UK listed companies with exposure to the US, Europe, and various other territories, Australia, for example. What does it mean for all of those businesses? Well, given that the US has such a big market already, they have the scale, they have the businesses, they're going to be the future Diageos and Unilevers of the world when all the three points that I mentioned earlier get sorted out. Europe becomes a very attractive place to operate a business because of the sheer size and the wealth of European citizens. Obviously, Europe is sort of not twice, but not far off the size of North America. So there's a lot of different territories in which they can operate. The rest of the world followed the US into prohibition, and we're going to follow it out. That's everyone's belief. We've seen rescheduling as a result of what's happened in the US and Canada, for example. These big US companies, they're rich pickings when they're ready, because of the scale and size of their operations. They're going to come and buy these assets. So ultimately, what you might be invested in here in Europe or Australia or wherever it might be is likely to form part of the very, very big giants in the future. So that's what I think. That's what I've always thought. I just think, you know, we have to sort of be a little bit steady with this. We have to be excited, but we also have to sort of be a bit measured. What I do think will happen is the four verticals being medical cannabis, pharmaceutical, i.e. pure pharmaceutical, because they're two quite different things. Then you have your over-the-counter wellness stuff, CBD, for example, and then you have your recreational. I think all of those four verticals will get lifted by the tides. So what will happen is, much like in the sort of bull market that we experienced in cannabis before, you're going to see the worst companies and the best companies all lifted up. Whereas at the moment, across the market in general, and let's not specific to cannabis, all you're seeing is everyone being valued against the sort of worst players, really. Utilized a lot of time there. I'll let Callum give his views.
No, I think Ed's exactly right. Look, any kind of cannabis reform is always positive, and across all four verticals, I think, as well. You're right to say that there is a rising tide whenever some kind of cannabis news of this nature comes out. What's good for cannabis is generally good for CBD. It's good for medicinal, it's good for pharmaceutical. And I think it's good, as you say, also to delineate between medical and pharmaceutical cannabis. I think that's quite important. I think the view is, yes, while this is super good news, we do have to be realistic. There is a difference between a scheduling review and descheduling of cannabis. So that's something that may not quite yet come to fruition. It's more of a decriminalization rather than a regulation. And I think at the same time, what we've got to expect is there to be some pushing and shoving in the US politically. We're going to need bipartisan support for these measures to come forward. But I think again, any news is good news on this front, and hopefully it leads to some sort of reform in relation to the Safe Banking Act and in relation to the mechanisms of business that allow cannabis companies to operate and to grow.
What's really interesting as well, Callum and guys, is that I've reviewed a lot of the research that's come out of the sort of known research houses such as Cowan and Stifel overnight. And they're actually painting two very different pictures, for example, if we use those two. You know, Cowan, who I think are probably perhaps a bit beaten up by the whole sector for quite a while because they've got a lot of exposure to it. And Stifel perhaps doesn't have quite as much exposure to it. But Cowan's view was quite negative, and that this is just political positioning. This is about votes. This is, you know, there's no real intention here. Whereas Stifel were, you know, this is going to see over the next 3 or 4 months a sort of 3x in values on these cannabis companies, which is, you know, obviously I'd welcome the Stifel view more. And
I think we've seen 20% so far on some companies, Ed, and that's about it overnight.
That's right. But, you know, I think what they're saying is as this proposal ramps up, and there has been a lot of talk, there is believed to be the bipartisan support for the Safe Banking Act, for example, which is a start, you know, that allows a lot of business to start moving, and potentially some of the better exchanges, because right now, if you're a US cannabis company, you have to list in Canada. You can't list in the US. So it's quite ridiculous. Whereas if you're a legal cannabis company in Canada, you can list in the US. I mean, there's some real problems in the way that the industry is operated there. As I said, I mean, genuinely, I do rate Stifel's research. We speak to them, and we've spoken to them for quite a few years, particularly my time at EMAC. We dealt with them a lot. And, you know, they are a good bunch of analysts. They, you know, and they give a lot of good reasoning as for why they believe what they believe. I think in general, it's very good news. I think it's just what we all needed, I suspect, for certainly Seed Innovations and Chill. We both have a lot of exposure to the sector. We've been beaten up heavily in what has just been an incredibly negative market. When you're on small exchanges, the smaller the exchange, the more you're going to get beaten up, because ultimately liquidity dries up and becomes significantly difficult. Therefore, any selling pressure creates a very negative outlook on your share price. So I think we've all experienced a lot of that over the past couple of years, particularly in the last 3 or 4 months, which I did warn July through to sort of November, I thought was going to be pretty rough. And it's sort of unfortunate it's come to fruition. It doesn't make it nice when it happens. But you know, it's
the way the world's sitting it in terms of the whole ability for places to be, or not places, people to be completely stressed out about what's going on in life, that this ability to have something that's going to chill you out, not necessarily alcohol, not necessarily all the way to cannabis, but to do those things, I can only see a positive, as long as we can get the world, if you like, the governments and the requisite things, so that people start to accept these things as the norm. And I think that started, and I think that's what Biden did. No, he's basically saying this is normal. You know, it should be allowed. You know, and I think that is a real.
But it is changing, Kev, because originally Biden actually wrote, he was criticised for writing, I think it was a 1994 crime bill that actually sort of stiffened penalties for drug crime. So there's a sea change.
And there will be. And I think if you look across a lot of these polls that have been taken in lots of different territories globally, there has been a much softer attitude towards cannabis. Now, a lot of people aren't still wild about recreational cannabis. They're like, oh, they like the smell. You know, have you seen people on cannabis? They look awful. What people don't see is the Fortune 500 and FTSE 100 leadership groups who often will use cannabis. And, you know, in the US and particularly in Canada, you see CEOs of major companies and serious leaders talking about their use of cannabis. And they're not your typical. The narrative around the kind of, hey, look, this guy's a stoner or whatever, they are, you know, hyper successful individuals, real alpha type people. And of course, you know, but they also, you don't see their alcohol consumption. You know, it's absolutely socially fine to sit there and have a bottle of wine over dinner of an evening. But
I'm just imagining now Phil from last night when we went to the Indian restaurant, and yeah, it was socially fine.
I mean, the other thing people do in the US, which is an interesting one, is microdosing of LSD. There's a lot of CEOs in Silicon Valley who use it for creativity purposes, and that's another angle. Is, you know, there is a kind of more of a social acceptance all the time of these new, well, not, they're not new drugs. I mean, LSD's been around for many years, as has cannabis, and as you say, obviously alcohol is one of the oldest. But yeah, I think there's a different attitude now to some of these drugs coming through and changes.
Psychedelics is a huge growing area. We're starting to see clinics spring up in London, also in New York. But ultimately, Ed is right in terms of social acceptance. And just looking at that company point again, you would hope that the chief execs and senior management teams of major cannabis companies would be trying their own products in the same way that you hope the CEO of Diageo is trying his own products. It's not really all that different. And we're actually, I think, now starting to see significant interest from major players outside of the cannabis world getting involved in companies that have significant potential going forward. So you look at the investment of British American Tobacco into Sanity Group. They just closed a Series A funding in Germany. That was over $30 million. And I think we'll continue to see this kind of consolidation, certainly, but interest from major, what people have previously considered to be legitimate businesses, into the new guard of cannabis and psychedelics and other substances as well.
And if we look at it across, again, going back to those four verticals, right, what do we get here? We get, if it's for medical reasons, you've got a wider array of treatment options than perhaps you had before. That's not a bad thing. You know, why should you or I or anyone judge, if you're at end of life care stage, if cannabis helps you on your journey towards the end, like, good on you, whatever helps. I certainly don't begrudge anyone using anything, quite frankly, but certainly, you know, why shouldn't they be able to use cannabis product? You know, if they've got horrible Crohn's disease and it gives them a better life and they able to get more nutrition into their body, why would you begrudge someone doing that? And I think what you're seeing across the world is no one does begrudge anyone who's doing that now. The old guard, the sort of demonizing of the product's gone. If you look across the recreational side, you know, there's very, very different demographics who use these products in all sorts of different ways.
Yeah.
If you look at the nutraceutical path now, you know, let's not forget that there's lots of hemp and CBD products that are put into various food sources. You know, it's just an ingredient.
Let's, do you think, Ed, that the medical effects will override the recreational sort of effect? In other words, you know, you won't just be the stoner on the street smoking cannabis. You'll be seeing it because people have seen the positives from it.
Yeah, I think, look, you're always going to have the people who are, you know, get into trouble with any product, right? And I think, again, this is the point that I want to talk about on these different verticals. With alcohol, for example, you have a regulated product, right? My young kid can't walk into an off license and buy that product. The fines are very, very big. It's just not accepted. You don't see 13-year-old kids or 12-year-old kids, you know, boozing on the street as much as perhaps you used to, because it's so heavily regulated. If you had that same kid and he wants to access cannabis, he can do that very, very easily. Now, by alleviating, and it's going to take a long time, but by getting rid of a black market, you create state wealth by taxing these things. You can't tax the black market. You can put them in jail, but it carries on, right? These things are incredibly successful businesses, quite frankly. They are operating illegally, but they are businesses. Let's not forget that. So you reduce harm ultimately by bringing these products into a regulated format. You're able to control and check it. You're able to create jobs. You know, I can understand why people are like, oh, I don't like the smell of it or whatever. Okay, fine. I don't like the smell of, you know, boozed up people. I don't drink, you know, fine. But I don't begrudge people for doing it. That's their choice. You know, we have to look beyond the sort of, there's the health and safety issue, but there's also, what does it mean for business? What does it mean for the world at a time where, let's be frank, we need to be able to generate as much employment, as much tax revenue as possible to get ourselves out of these massive holes that have been created by, let's be honest, first the pandemic and the global response to it, which I think many people will agree was totally wrong and we're paying for it now. And then you've obviously got supply chain issues created by that, but then completely exaggerated by a war in Ukraine, which has taken a third of the world's supply chain into disarray. So, you know, let's be creative. Let's find ways to keep people in employment. Let's give people the opportunity to be successful. You know, we live in a capitalist society, whether people agree with it or not. If we're going to be capitalists, let's let people do the right thing, but let's do it openly, honestly, transparently, and in a regulated fashion.
If you just look at the tax benefits and potential for us to raise revenue through a route of legalized cannabis or through really just a proper regulated market. Colorado does $450 million every year in tax revenue, and they've got 6.5 million residents. So that's around the size of London, and they're generating such a significant revenue off the back of a regulated market that the benefits, when you set aside social concerns, are just there for the taking. And I think, you know, you're right to suggest that this is certainly a slow burn. We're not going to see anything generate massive change overnight. You know, Biden's words are important, but it's the actions that count now. But I think hopefully this is a catalyst for a long and exciting journey towards better tax revenues for countries, better opportunities for businesses, and generally just better outcomes for people who use cannabis for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah, and how much are these economies going to save from the cost of imprisoning these people for this thing as well? This is huge. Yeah, you know, the US must spend billions a year putting people into jail because of cannabis and different drugs. So, yeah, you've got to have a point that from an economic point, it makes a lot of sense. Assuming that if you as a government then start to use these things in a positive way, then there's going to be less problems, you would imagine, than the way it's done at the minute. But anyway, I'm sure we could talk all day about this. So now what we're going to do is we're going to give you a couple of minutes. We'll start with Callum just to talk about your individual companies. Okay, so tell us where you're at, what's happened, and where you think you're going to go in the next period of time.
Do you want to start? Yeah, so we're looking at Chill specifically. We've obviously just released our trading results to the end of March 22. Everybody, I think, understood and expected that to be a very difficult trading period. People understood also that our sales relationships weren't working. And it's fairly obvious that when our raise came in April, that things were not as they should have been. But really, I think we're in a very good position at the moment. Chill is at the center point of a lot of industries. Obviously, we're involving ourselves in CBD heavily, and that has been to this point the linchpin of the business. But we're also involved in the tobacco alternative sector that's getting very hot. And really, we're trying to diversify ourselves in a way that, going back to a point that Ed made not long ago in the previous discussion, CBD is just an ingredient. If you look at some of the most successful brands today that are making money from CBD, you look at people like Vitabiotics or Jack Black Cosmetics in the States, they have a range of products that do what they say they'll do, whether that's sort of skincare, whether that's relaxation, whether it's as a tobacco cessation product. But CBD features as part of that range. They still make money from it. They still make it a focal point and a centerpiece, but it is not the only ingredient that they're using, and why should it be? That's where we're trying to get Chill to at the moment. We're launching new sales relationships. We're looking to launch new products very, very shortly, and I'll be able to announce more on that soon. But really, this is just an overhaul of what the company appears to be in the market. And what it is trying to be is a consumer goods company that, as I say, sits within those sort of pillars: tobacco alternatives, recreational relaxation, and the non-psychoactive end of cannabis.
Over to you, Ed. How's things going at Seed?
Look, it's been a very difficult time, particularly for the share price. Obviously, we are a fund. We're a regulated fund, so we are always tied to our net asset value, unlike, you know, operators, for example. So it's always tricky because you always have the ball and chain of net asset value sat around your neck. You have to report both positive and negative movements on that. So that's never fun. Obviously, in a market like this, assets get beaten up in terms of their paper value, i.e. what people would be willing to pay for that asset at any one time. But I think, it, as is so often the case, and I feel like a broken record saying it, but our net asset value versus our share price is, you know, a serious discount, perhaps the biggest it's been in a number of years. You know, notionally, if you were to look at the net asset value today and assume that everything's sold, even at a discount, you would still receive, in theory, multiples of the existing share price in cash back. So, and look, there's no intention of doing that, because the last thing you'd do is sell assets in a really tough market unless you absolutely had to. And thankfully, we're in a good position from a cash perspective. We don't need cash to operate the business. It's good to see that we are now finally getting some positive movement in the cannabis space. And I'm really looking forward to that, because as everyone well knows, that is a big part of our portfolio. We have companies like Little Green Pharma, which are listed. We expect to see them have a much better run over the coming months. They're doing very well as an operational business, which is the other critical thing. We have businesses that we're very happy with the way they operate. Even if you look at Yuma, for example, which from a share price perspective has been an absolute horror story, again, on two very poor exchanges, you know, they're producing significant amounts of revenue relative to their peers in the space. Now, that's got to be seen as a positive thing in a tough market like this. They have viable, real businesses. I think that's a really important thing to state. Avextra the other day, which was formerly known as Eurox, a German company, also raised a significant amount of cash against the backdrop of a very difficult market. Now, as we all know, Germany is very much talking about the a move to recreational cannabis, and that's obviously going to be very, very positive for that particular entity, of which we have, you know, a meaningful stake of the business, circa 8-9%, depending on what happens with the convertible loan note that they've raised. I would expect that to, well, I certainly would hope that would be at a premium in due course. So again, we're actually in a really positive place operationally, but, you know, we do have to put out statements that are negative when markets are really tough. That's just the nature of the beast. And as I said, we're invested in companies. We're not invested in share prices. Yes, they ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what matters. But it only matters when you sell these assets. So, you know, we actually feel pretty positive. Again, it's brutal having to put out negative statements in a tough market, especially when you hope values are going to increase significantly. But as we discussed briefly before we went live, it's a bloodbath out there on everything. You know, you can buy free cash in lots of businesses in the energy sector for hardly anything. You know,
as long as you start the announcement, Ed, with "is pleased to announce," then whatever follows after it doesn't matter.
we try and avoid.
No. I like the fact, Ed, that you're talking about your share price like it's a real thing, like it's a human being. the share price is having a hard time.
He's going through a bad patch.
Yeah, we've decided that our share price is going to smoke a few things and take a few things, and it will feel a lot better in the morning.
You could definitely do with that. I think one thing that's interesting, both Callum and I, and obviously we know each other a little bit outside of our roast calls, we both have a similar place in terms of, obviously our businesses are very, very different that we run, but we've both come into a situation that has legacy assets, legacy problems that we both had to sort out. And you know, it's very difficult. It's a bit like, and to use an analogy, it's a bit like when you meet a girl and you sort of get very close to one another, but you realize she at least believes she's been cheated on heavily or had a rough time with the previous boyfriend. And you get to experience all of that mistrust and everything else. That's just the nature of the beast. That's not me, or I'm sure Callum, and I don't want to speak for Callum, but I doubt we either of us particularly feel like victims, but it's just the nature of the beast. And you know, it does make your job a little bit harder, certainly from a public relations perspective, because you're always dealing with the issues of the past. And it becomes sometimes quite difficult to move forward and put your own stamp on things and drive things. And it takes time as well. It takes a long time to unwind that kind of sentiment. But look, I actually feel really positive despite the
yeah. I predict, Ed, that your girlfriend's going to start trusting you in the next year, and then you'll be okay.
Thanks, Kevin. Look, the problem
no coming home to bunnies in a pan on the stove, you know.
Thankfully I'm married, and my wife is fantastically cool, and
she must be listening. She must be in earshot.
Tell her it was an analogy, okay? Whatever you do.
She's got a young baby and a crazy 2.5-year-old to deal with at the moment, so I doubt she's listening.
Would it be safe to say that Seed are in a better position now than they ever have been?
I would say, look, obviously that the marketplace at the moment for assets in general, people are going to want to pay less for them. That's just the nature of, you know, multiples have come down across every different industry pretty much. I'm sure there are outliers. Someone will take this out of context, and that's the other problem. Everyone takes everything out of context if it suits their own specific narrative, and I understand that. That's just par for the course. But I think we have to look at things in the cold light of day. We're in a rough market right now. The key is, in a tough market, do you have businesses that can operate? Do you have businesses that have got enough cash to get through, you know, a sustained long period of, you know, unhappiness in the market, poor sentiment, you know, whatever you want to call it. And the answer in our case is yes, we're in a very good position in that respect. It's taken a long time to get certain assets to a place where, you know, we fully understand everything, but certainly of the newer assets that we've invested in, we're very comfortable. We know the management's really well. We're very involved in what they do on a day-to-day basis. We don't run the companies, far from it. But, you know, we're super interested in what they do. And because it's that's ultimately how we're going to deliver value back to investors. And it's obviously very difficult in a market like this, but the world will keep turning, you know.
Yeah. So, Ed, I asked you a specific question about Seed because this was the one that was going to be coming front and forward shortly, was Leap Gaming. Then where are we at with Leap Gaming?
So Leap, you know, continues to operate. It's a business that it's done a lot of things very well, but it also is in a space that's been beaten up heavily like everything else. You know, if you look at some recent transactions in gaming, you know, people have taken a third off the value of these companies, you know, overnight during mid-deal. So this is just how things are at the moment. You know, I don't want to get into too much detail, but we're content with what's going on there. And as always, we're trying to make as absolutely the best return as we possibly can for investors. But as a board, you know, we're regulated. There's no hiding. We have to do whatever's right for the business and the investors at any time. And that's what we continue to do.
Okay, Callum. So my question to you is, you know, Chill, / Zoetic, so / Highland Natural Resources before that, you know, you've got a whole client base there of investors that have been on this journey before, from 2 to 3p. all the way to £1, which looking back was ludicrous valuation actually, but if only I had realized at the time. How do you see the next, let's say, 1 to 3 years developing in the space of Chill? Because having met with you the other day, it's a much bigger game in my view now than, oh, let's just try and sell a few CBD products. Okay, so give us your overview on that.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think, you know, splitting that question out a little bit, what does the immediate future look like? Well, Ed mentioned it there, but it's really about financial responsibility in a very tough market. We're starting and already have seen a significant number of players in the CBD space who are incredibly, incredibly distressed. I would not be surprised to see a vast number of those guys struggle and either look for an exit shortly or simply just to wind up their businesses. We're seeing that a lot in the private market. And frankly, there are a lot of people who just white label products and have no real USP who are already shutting up shop. So I think that the first point is just we have to be financially responsible. We have money in the bank. We have a significant set of assets to our name. We're selling products. We're winding that into something larger. We're increasing our sales relationships. So the key for the next 12 months is, of course, and there's no way to sugarcoat it, survival and making sure the business is in a healthy financial state. So we're already on our way to that. We've been making vast cost-cutting. We've been taking vast cost-cutting opportunities. And I announced kind of last week, we've taken £1 million off of the spend so far, $1 million. So that's the first point. But I think, as you kind of alluded to, Kevin, there is a wider play here. And that is going back to the point I made earlier, not just to be selling CBD. CBD is great. There's lots of applications for it. There's lots of applications for cannabis. And Ed did a very good job of splitting that out into four pillars earlier on. But I see a wider game here, which is in natural functional products. I mentioned two brands earlier, Vitabiotics and Jack Black in the States. But look at Vitabiotics for a moment. They're the UK's largest supplements brand. They do 300 million of revenue a year, and that's around sort of 30, 40% from sales in the UK. So they've been around a very long time. They've established a great name for themselves. And they advertise CBD products. You know, if you go into London, you will see them if you keep your eye out for them. And it's just part of their business. And I think while CBD is always going to be a real center point for Chill, again, it's only going to be part of our business. We're starting now by expanding our product ranges so that we're not just selling a run-of-the-mill CBD wellness product, but the intention is then to expand into other functional ingredients to get ourselves into a position where we are selling products that live up to the name Chill. So when people pick up a cigarette, a bottle of wine, whatever it happens to be, they're finding a way to relax, they're finding a way to chill. When they're looking after themselves with a supplement that contains maca or green tea extract, lavender, chamomile, in the States, melatonin, again, they're trying to look after themselves with better sleep, better health, better downtime. That's the position I see us in. And not only with our own products, but also by opening up chill.com and the traffic that we're generating and continuing to grow to a wider set of brands. They're not people that compete with us, but they're people that complement us. And I think it's very much a relationship where we scratch their back and they scratch ours, because we're delivering sales to them. They're delivering traffic to us. It's that cycle. And I can really see chill.com developing into not an eBay or Amazon style marketplace, but a very curated setup where we generate revenues for ourselves and other brands in a way that really amalgamates the very best of that natural functional product industry. I think that's really where we sit within the next year to 2 years. And beyond that, it's just getting down to brass tacks with sales in physical stores. You know, obviously I've spoken a lot about chill.com. For us now, it's making sure that our products are being sold or marketed to the right people. In the past, we've looked exclusively at the C-store channel, convenience stores, the gas stations. It's time to broaden that and spread our wings a little bit. And I think over the next few weeks and months, you'll start to see some of that come to life.
Very good. And I have to say, we met you and had a long chat for numerous hours. And yes, we had a very nice curry in London with you the other day. And it was an eye-opener to see how wide you're thinking in terms of where this can all go. So personally, I'm pretty excited about that. And it's very exciting, really, I suppose, to have you two, as I'm a 54-year-old man, I can say you two pups on here effectively running these companies, because I think you've got the modern view and a way to move forward in this space that will allow things to move as well. So I'm extremely encouraged by both companies. I think Ed, you're massively undervalued in terms of your net present value for sure, and Callum, you're massively undervalued because of the assets that you hold and the potential revenue that's going to come as the existing products are sold in a better way, if you like, and also that the new products that are coming, hopefully we're going to announce some of those in the next few weeks even, that, you know, you're going to create more revenue streams. So I expect you both to survive and both to flourish over the coming years, I think. So good luck.
Thanks for the kind words, Kevin. I have to say I agree with you. I think both companies have a bright future. I'm a big fan of Callum. He's a smart guy. He's sensible. We've met a number of times on various different items, and it's not an easy grind sometimes. And at the moment, I think all investors, whether anyone likes it or not, we're all having to be a little bit patient, and our time horizons, our investment horizons have actually all been pushed out, whether we like it or not. But, the rewards do come. It can just be a painful process getting there. And that's unfortunately the world that we're all in right now. But I do think things will change. The humans are very good at sort of forgetting the pain. You go back to GFC, which I was, well into my career at that stage. I had the very good years leading up to that. And then all of a sudden we had this monumental crash. Now, I don't think we all felt it perhaps as much as everyone's going to feel this current issue because of all the energy crisis, and therefore our bills are all going to go up, our mortgages are all, it's going to be a painful period, but rest assured, markets are very robust. Businesses are very robust. And, if they're not, they find a way to become robust through M&A. That's how we end up with the Goliaths out there that we all know as household names. And I think we're all part of that process, and we are building in some cases the companies, or investing in the companies that are going to become part of those big household names in the future. So, unfortunately, patience is a very difficult thing to say to people when they already feel like they've been as patient as they can ever be. But that's where we're all at. We're not going to stop working. We're all committed to the cause.
I think the common theme as well that people can take a little bit of confidence from really is both with Seed, that's a little bit further down the line, and Chill as well, diversification is really, really key. And so for anybody, I think, to build their entire company right now around a single ingredient, as I say, that to me is complete madness. But at the same time, Seed has other interests, irons in the fire with Leap and other investments. Chill, certainly, we're in the process very heavily of getting ourselves diversified to a position where we're selling more than just the CBD that everybody else is pushing as well. And I think that it's that diversification and it's that variety that's going to lend strength to companies like both of ours in the coming months, years, and so on.
Callum and Ed, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
Pleasure as always. Yeah, that was a good chat. Always good to catch up with Ed and Callum, isn't it?
Yeah, as I said, they're the future, aren't they? The young pups, and they seem to know what they're doing. I mean, Ed has a lot of experience, and also Calvin a lot of knowledge in terms of the legal background and the way things work and how to do things with companies. He's had a fairly extensive experience in that before he came to this. But yeah, all good. And it's good to hear and listen to what they're doing.
It's good to see a little bit of correction on the CBD stocks as well. I was just looking at some of the daily movers today. I was looking at some of the daily movers on Friday, and most of the UK CBD stocks were up, some were up about 15-16%, others were only up 5%. But there was definitely, let's say, a knock-on effect from Biden's decisions, let's say. What else has been going on this week? There was the mass news about the acquisition of the shovel-ready sites. I mean, obviously, it comes at a time now where the Ofgem have announced that the UK is at significant risk of gas shortages this winter, and there is talks of potential blackouts. What are your thoughts on how mass can come in and kind of provide a solution to this?
Well, I think the solution is going to be that some of these off-peak situations are going to be, the generators are going to have to allow them to do the more than 4,000 hours a year, because they've basically got the ability to produce the electricity. So that seems like a scenario that's going to allow MAST and others to create more electricity. So that's got to be part of the plan, you would think, if it came to that. Yeah, it seems that they're going to be making exceptional profits anyway.
the only short to medium term solution is to bolster the reserve power capacity by actually increasing the reserve power generation capacity and allowing existing facilities like we've seen at Pybridge to operate for longer than what is, you know, currently allowed. So MED is actually perfectly positioned to do both of that. And I think that, that once that the regulator authorities kind of implement these new options, then, you know, any shortfall in supply can be, you know, generated, and that will generate even better revenue for companies like MED going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to agree.
Okay. So what we'll do is we managed to catch up in the week with Peter Krugel, the CEO of Mast Energy Developments, and here's what he had to say. Today, we're joined by Peter Krugel, CEO of Mast Energy Developments. Welcome back, Peter. How's things?
Hi, Paul. Good and you? Good to be back. Good to touch base again.
Excellent. Yeah. So obviously now just this week, we saw MED complete an acquisition of two further reserve power projects and secure the associated funding. Do you want to talk us through the details?
Yes. Thank you, Paul. We are very excited about the acquisition of the two further sites. It's been a while in the oven, and we're very pleased that we could conclude the deal. It's two quality sites. We spent quite a bit of time and energy making sure that it adheres to our rigorous technical and investment specifications in order to deliver the best outcome for our shareholders. We also believe that we concluded the deal on very favorable commercial terms, both from the consideration perspective as well as from the associated funding perspective. And it will greatly increase MED's portfolio, with 54% bringing it up to close to circa 30 megawatts of total generation output capacity. So we've taken a very definitive step forward, and yeah, we're very excited about this latest development. And it comes at the right time. The market is at unprecedented high levels, and we're very pleased to be able to benefit and partake in the current market environment.
Yeah. I mean, as you just alluded to there, I was looking at the funding arrangement in the RNS. It does look pretty favorable and competitive at the same time.
Yes, absolutely. That was a big focus for us. You know, I mean, further acquisitions and growing the business and the portfolio to our target of 300 megawatts is inevitably going to require further funding. That's just how the business model is structured. And I think that's very clear. But, you know, obtaining favorable funding that's going to work out the best for MED and its shareholders is a paramount focus for us. And we believe that the funding that we negotiated on this transaction is definitely market leading and market beating. It's not terms that you see very often. So we're very pleased to have been able to negotiate that.
Yeah, I think you've been unreservedly calm about the funding, because it's a brilliant deal for Mast. I mean, at the end of the day, you're just free, and they can't change the shares until the share price is up 200%.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. It's an interest-free loan. They have an option to convert, but yeah, as you said, only if the share price is up 200%. So that gives it a lot of headroom. So all in all, I think the funding is a win-win for Mast and its shareholders. It facilitates the transaction on very favorable terms.
And whereabouts are these, just so everybody understands, whereabouts are these sites?
They are predominantly in the East Midlands, in a similar area to the rest of our sites. And at this stage, that's important for us economies of scale perspective, logistics and getting to site, etc. Also from the embedded benefits perspective, you know, the location of a site is directly linked to the level of embedded benefits that a site can get. So we also make, you know, as part of our assessment criteria, we make sure that a site is located in a region that's got very favorable embedded benefits, which just adds to the whole economic model of each site.
Yeah, does it mean effectively that you're likely to be negotiating with the same electricity providers as well?
Yes, absolutely.
You already have relationships with, obviously.
Yes, definitely. So, and that's all part of economies of scale. So we've got existing relationships with market-leading DNOs, and you know, we'll just plug and play straight into them.
How do you intend that this will progress? Obviously, it's shovel ready.
you can basically start straight away, I presume. But how do you see that progressing?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Kevin. So one of our key criteria with taking on development sites are that they need to have certain key development milestones already in place in order to make them shovel ready as defined. And that would be four very important things: the property rights. So we prefer freehold sites or, you know, long-term leaseholds with options of renewal. Then we're talking 25 years plus, which is the case for these two sites. So the property right is the first thing. Planning consent, second. It needs to be fully planned and permitted. Then the connections, grid and gas, is also key. That needs to be secured. And then lastly, the EPC configuration to be in place as well. So if those four things are in place, the site is technically shovel-ready, which these sites are. And then, you know, once we've taken it on, the very next step would be ground investigation to make sure that the EPC configuration can be put on the ground on site. And then we start with construction.
So these sites were half owned by Duke Mount, is it half owned by effectively Arlington? So just tell us a little bit about that. What is the situation? You now own the sites outright?
Yes. We bought both sites outright from those parties. It's housed in special purpose vehicles, companies that we bought the entire issued share capital off. So we own these sites outright in its totality.
Okay, so this for me is sort of the start of the snowball. And we discussed this the last time in terms of increasing the megawatt availability that's going to be within MAST. And do you see further deals possible in the rest of the year?
We do. We currently have a pipeline under assessment of about 100 megawatts, you know, actively under assessment, you know, some already at legal. So definitely more deals coming. And as you said, I mean, it's a very good, you know, way to put it, the snowball has started now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just going to grow from here.
In the week, there was RNS for Conroy Gold, CGNR ticker for results at Clontibret. Some of the drilling that they'd been doing with Demir. So we caught up with Professor Conroy and we'll let you listen to what he has to say.
Welcome, Richard. It's great to have you back on the podcast.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back with more good news.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this week we saw more Clontibret drilling results. Do you want to talk us through them?
Yes, they're excellent results because a 30-meter intersection is never to be sniffed at. And when it is 100 meters away from another very wide, even wider intersection, that is very, very, very positive news indeed. It's excellent news. So this drilling program, and this is only the initial drilling program, is already bringing in excellent results. So we're very happy.
That's good. I mean, for those that don't know, let's just go back one step and just give an overview of what's happened in the last sort of 12 months to Conroy Gold, because it's been a complete game changer for this company. It's obviously been working hard for a number of years to try and look at this basically huge gold district that is going running down the center of Ireland. But in the last year, that has come to life, basically. It's not just a dream anymore that we drill a few holes and this is what's happening. So give us your overview of that.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's transformational. Now, as you also rightly say, there's been a lot of hard work over many years gone into it, a lot of thought, and let's be honest about it, a lot of very good luck. We certainly didn't expect when we started out that we'd end up with a 40-mile gold trend, 100% owned by this company, 800 square kilometers in total. It is, as far as we can find out, unknown among the mining industry that a very small company such as ourselves should end up in such an extraordinarily strong position. And as you say, it's been further transformed during the course of the last 12 months, and that this very strong position on the ground has now been greatly reinforced, strengthened to move forward by bringing in a joint venture partner, with ample financial resources and an interest in developing the entire property. So we're in an exceptionally good position. We're seeing the results now this year of the work that went on for many years, the excellent work by our geologists and everyone involved. So we're very, very happy indeed. It transforms the company. We can look forward now to very substantial revenue in due course. We can look forward to a transformation in our market capitalization. We can look forward to further opportunities. There are a whole series of things now based on a lot of hard work over many years, but it's now coming to fruition. And it's very nice to see it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the important thing from the company's perspective is you obviously got paid, I think, €1 million there. There's not going to be any raises in the foreseeable future for sure until we're at the point where the mine is ready to go. And then you still have a choice whether you actually get the carry or you actually fund the mines yourself.
Well, the 1 million, with great respect to us, 1 million is always very welcome. And we've certainly gone through the process of being a small company when 1 million would have been manna from heaven, as it were. But in the overall context at the moment, although the 1 million is very much appreciated, it is, with great respect to it, a relatively small facet of a far, far larger picture. In that simply for our joint venture, it is an earn-in. In other words, the joint venture partner will be spending money to gain a percentage. And there is a lot of money which they've already undertaken to spend if they're to earn 25%. At the moment, that is now starting, and it's tremendous to see it underway. And then they have to spend several millions more before you get to the 40% stage. And then you have to spend many millions more as you go through the process of mine permitting, planning permission, and various other permissions. And then, of course, the main thing of all, and that's the actual construction of the first mine. And it looks from the technical situation is that there's going to be a series of mines, probably the first one at Llantybryd, possibly Clay Lake. Clay Lake is even bigger than Llantybryd, but that's for the mining engineers and the technical people to decide those sort of matters, and they're already beginning to obviously think about them. So it's a very different situation for us, and we're now looking at a situation which indeed our own brokers and various other parties have suggested that a market capitalization far higher than our present market capitalization would be appropriate.
So the other bit of significant news we saw was from Glencore Resources, that they received an approach or had an approach from a potential strategic party in China. And obviously there was this potential to provide offtake contracts and project funding solution for the Orem Cross graphite project. We did catch up with Mike earlier on in the week, and here's what he had to say. Today, we're joined by Mike Rolston, CEO of Glencore Resources. Welcome back, Mike. How's things?
Yeah, good. Thanks to you. It's nice to be back, and thanks for having me.
Great. So obviously today we saw the exciting news of an approach from a potential strategic party in China. Do you want to tell us more, Mike?
Yeah, we've been engaging with various different parties in terms of offtake and gauging interest, I guess, in our end product. Ever since we completed the PFS in July, I think we've made that clear to the market, and sending our technical data sheets, various discussions, lots of discussions with different parties. So there's a lot going on. In this particular case, there's interest coming from Asia, and that interest is essentially saying we want product, we like what you've got, but ultimately, in order to make any sort of impact, any sort of meaningful contracts out of this, we need to go through a bulk sample test first, and that requires us digging it out, shipping it there, and then going through a trial facility. The good part, I guess, is that we're not building that facility. It's something that's already there, so it does save us the costs of building something ourselves, but it has to be bulk sample tested, and ultimately we'll see where we go from there.
Okay. Mike, you should sound more excited, I think, at this point, because we've basically just taken a huge leap in terms of our ability to monetize Glencore Resources. Surely this is really significant.
Yeah, you're right, Kevin. You're right. I should be more excited. I guess I just sort of see this as the practicalities of getting a job done. But you're correct. We've always said that the last piece of the puzzle is how do we sell this product? We know that we've got plenty of it. We know that it upgrades to a very good concentrate. So we really need to find the parties to buy it. And with graphite, as we've mentioned several times on previous calls, there's no ubiquitous market that you just send it into a London metals market or something similar. You actually have to go out and find end users and negotiate and work with them on a relationship basis. So yeah, having somebody approach us and want to do this with us is a huge step forward. It doesn't mean we've obviously got any contracts at this stage. That's for the future. But at this stage where I'm standing, it's a big step forward. And obviously, we're very excited about that.
But as you were talking to us before, this has all come about because another third party wasn't able to provide the amount of graphite that this Chinese organization required. So he needed help in terms of being able to provide to this corporation. So, you know, the potential for this happening is pretty high by the sounds of things.
Yeah, it's a market. And, you know, we've seen all of analysts' forecasts about where graphite's going. I attended a Benchmark Minerals Intelligence conference here in Perth last week, and everyone was saying the same thing we've heard time and time again. There's going to be a massive shortage. That shortage is going to be kicking in over the next couple of years. So to hear it coming from parties that actually buy the product and they're saying they're short and they require product is obviously manifesting some of the of what we've heard from the forecasts and the analysts before. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, something that we wanted to explore and we're obviously going to be following this path and seeing where it goes. But if it comes to fruition, there's not just an offtake contract out of this and potentially an offtake contract for all of our stage one product, but potentially more and potentially funding and EPC contracts as well. So it sort of presents as a much larger package and obviously is quite exciting in that regard as well.
Yeah, and I note that you had the different financial notes presented as well, and that was updated recently as well, saying that obviously we had the NPV of $484 million, I think it was, for the 2% of Aurum Cross. And then the potential share price now, I think they said should be 50p, was it, from 27p? So we're languishing at 3.5p. Your last raise was at 5p to a institutional investor. And we've had an awful market, and this is the reality of the thing. So, you know, have you any comments on that? And I mean, obviously, this takes the pressure off the company having to dilute itself significantly just to move forward.
Yeah, I think what you say is right. It's been a pretty average summer for the UK market.
Average?
In many different ways. Okay.
It's a polite average way of saying it.
But, you know, I guess we can't change that. You know, there's a lot of macro forces, whether it's a war going on in Ukraine, where there's interest rate rise and all sorts of, you know, government policy going on there. There's a lot of stuff happening. We can't do much about any of that. What we've got to do is keep pushing our project forward in terms of value adding. And then the kind of numbers that you've just been pointing out where, you know, the value of this thing is incredibly high. We've obviously put out an NPV of nearly $500 million. And really it's about de-risking it more and more and more so that that number becomes a reality rather than just, you know, something as a future that we may get to at a point.
Been a pretty busy week in terms of RNSs, as you can obviously, as you can see from the number of podcasts we've done this week with these companies. So it's good to see good news, you know, big news coming out, especially things like strategic approaches. So what else has been on the radar this week, Kev? We've seen some pretty good movers in Prospects Energy. And the other one that you know, I picked up was Made.com, where they effectively under NDA with a couple of potential suitors to buy the business. I think it is a bit of an ailing business in the sense that it will need some funding going forward. But what do you think of that, the movement we saw on Thursday, where it went from kind of the low fives into the 10 pence? It did 100% in the day. Do you think it warrants the current market cap?
Well, the interesting thing, it went down to what, nearly 3p or 2.9 or something at one point. In fact, maybe even less than that. And over the last week, it's recovered basically, you know, two or threefold. Slight correction then on Friday. But yeah, I mean, it had a valuation of £700 million at one point. And Now,
yeah, it came to market at 750 million, didn't it? Which is frightening. I mean, it was, I think that like it was 160 was the 52-week high, so that was the highest it's been. And as you alluded to just then, the low was 2.9, so a massive swing. They've got a really good website. I don't know if you've been on it. Go to made.com and have a look at the furniture. There is some really, really nice furniture on there.
So yeah, I saw it. And the whole story behind it was that the guy, and this company's been about 10 years or more, because the guy basically saw that he could buy furniture that was made in China from a fancy place in New York City for maybe $3,500. And he could get it made in China for $275. So this is where the business opportunity came. Obviously, they've stumbled on hard times in terms of their ability to fund the thing. And now the market cap has gone down to, well, it was 20 million on the day you were discussing it. And then it zoomed up and now it's 32 million. It's a bit like chill.com in the way that made.com has to have quite a large intrinsic value. So is the company basically made.com? How much could made.com be sold for? You know, we've been talking about $20 million, $25 million, $30 million for just a one word .com scenario.
I mean, you can imagine some like entrepreneur who's multimillionaire or billionaire coming along and just buying the made, you know, he's made it.com, you know, he's made.com. It's a great name, isn't it? It really is a great, there's people who would probably bid into the hundreds of millions for something like that.
Yeah, possibly. But I mean, even if you are less optimistic than that, you'd have to say with the structure of the business, they've had, revenues of 370, 380 million pounds a year. This is not a nonsensical business. This has got something, but it needs cash, obviously. And that's why the valuation is where it is. You know, if you think about it, if they manage to have a profit margin of even 10% on their products and streamline the thing, that would be 38 million pound profit a year. And the current market capitalization is about 30 million pounds. So yeah, maybe this is an opportunity. Someone's going to bid on it, I think. And I think it's probably going to go significantly higher than it is, to be honest. But yeah, you traded it, didn't you, yesterday, and made a handsome profit. So that was good. E-Star Resources, Alex met with the government this week about the rare earth opportunity they've got there. And the government is very strongly behind them because it wants to obviously have this for its future prosperity as well. So that was good to see. Assay results can't be too far away for that company as well. So yeah, that was my one to look out for in the next few weeks. And I'm still on board with that to look out for it. It seemed busy, and the whole market in terms of the small cap seemed to be, in my view, stabilizing a little bit, which was good after the downside. The main market, as in the FTSE's, been obviously hit slightly. Dollars recovered, and now it's not in the newspapers, shock horror. So it's still not recovered to any great extent, but we're at $1.13, $1.14. So, you know, that panic seems to be over. And really, still can't believe how strong the dollar is, to be honest. So it's like, will that change? So yeah, we're moving forward day by day. And hopefully, as the markets are forward-looking things, that each day that goes by, we're getting closer to a glimmer of light, a glimmer of hope that things are going to progress and things are going to move forward. So we will see.
Good. Well, on that note, I think it's a good time to wrap up and say thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. I'll speak to you next week.
Yeah, thanks for listening again. Speak to you next week.
All right, have a good one. And look forward to working with you next week.
Yeah, all the best.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.